This is Castle Playhouse. From the stages and studios, producers and playwrights of the world, your hosts, the brewers of Castle Lager, bring you the week's finest radio entertainment, Castle Playhouse.
The Unguarded Hour by Bernard Merivale. Sir James Dearden, the brilliant prosecuting counsel, has reached a climax in a trial at the Old Bailey, where a young man, Metcalfe, is accused of murdering his wife. Lady Yvonne, Sir James's beautiful wife, has been sitting in on the trial, hating the cruel way in which her husband has been browbeating the prisoner, whom she believes to be innocent. Arriving home, she finds their great friend, the Colonel Bill Mason of Scotland Yard, and persuades him to try to get James to be more tolerant and understanding. An hour later, Sir James arrives home with a badly gashed hand. Discussing the trial, Bill tries to convince James that he might be wrong, and lightheartedly puts James on trial, challenging him to account for his movements since leaving the court. While James is struggling to do so, Scotland Yard phones Bill to inform him that a woman has been murdered in the vicinity where James has just been. James cannot produce a witness to corroborate his movements, and realizes that he's reached his unguarded hour. The Unguarded Hour by Bernard Merivale is adapted and produced for radio by Anne Freed.
My lord, before continuing my examination of the accused, there is one matter I wish to mention. In collaboration with the Home Office pathologist, Sir Thomas Granger, we're carrying out an experiment to establish whether the blood found at the foot of Eagle Rock, blood proved to be that of Mrs. Metcalfe, the deceased, came from a wound caused by the prisoner striking his wife prior to her fall from the precipice to the rocks beneath. The result of this experiment, we feel, may have a direct bearing on the case.
You may proceed, Sir James.
Thank you, my lord. Now I shall continue my examination of the accused. Metcalfe, when the court adjourned, I was asking you about your visit to Ambleside in the Lake District. Were you or Mrs. Metcalfe familiar with that part of the country?
I was. I was educated there.
And your wife, the deceased?
No. But her health hadn't been too good, and I hope the...
You were concerned with your wife's health. Very creditable of you, I'm sure. So you engaged a room at a hotel at Ambleside for the night of the 14th of May.
Yes.
The countryside is very beautiful, I believe. How long do you suppose it would take you to visit all the places of interest?
Well, a week. 10 days, perhaps.
A week or 10 days... Yet you engaged a room for one night only, one single night.
Yes.
Why? Ambleside is 287 miles from London. You took a journey of 287 miles for the purpose of spending one night in the Lake District?
We might have stayed longer if...
What? If your wife had not lost her life the morning after your arrival?
No, I meant...
You had arrived at the hotel the previous night, after a long and tiring journey. Yet, the following morning, you took your wife, a sick woman, walking to the summit of the mountain pass, the Eagle Rock. Who suggested this long and tiring journey? You or your wife?
I did.
You did?
No, she did. I can't remember. It was months ago.
I put it to you, the proposal came from you.
I may have done. I can't remember.
It may have done. Very well, then. On the morning of the 15th, although your wife was in poor health, You chose to devote the whole day to a strenuous sightseeing expedition. I suggest to you that you knew perfectly well that on the evening of the 15th, your visit to Ambleside was likely to be abruptly terminated. Have you anything to say?
No. She wanted to go.
Very well. You climbed the mountain and reached a plateau at the top. Was there room for two people to stand in safety?
Yes.
No accident has been reported from that spot. And yet you say that an accident occurred that day.
Well, I swear it was an accident.
You are on trial for your life, Metcalf. You are giving evidence on oath. Do you still say that your wife's sudden fall from the summit down to the rocks beneath was an accident?
I do. She was in an excited state of mind. She would go too near the edge. I called her back, but she wouldn't come. I caught hold of her to pull her back. We had a sort of a struggle, and over she went.
Oh. Yes, over she went. And only you know what took place between you and the deceased upon the plateau of Eagle Rock that afternoon.
But there was the lady we met.
There's the lady you say you met. Had she been staying at the same hotel?
I don't know. I've never seen her before.
But she came from the direction of Ambleside.
I think so.
You think so. Can you describe the lady?
I can't remember.
Is she fair or dark, short or tall?
I don't know. I can't remember. It's so long ago.
You can tell us nothing about her whatever.
Well, I've told you before the only thing I can remember about her.
Yes, you've told the court that this indescribable lady was wearing a silver wheat sheaf in her hat. Now, I wonder why you remember that so clearly.
I noticed it when she stopped and chatted with us for a few minutes.
What did you talk about?
Well, my wife would go too near the precipice. So I called her back and the lady laughed and chaffed me about being over-anxious.
And the lady heard you warn your wife of the possible danger of going too close to the edge. She heard you call your wife back?
Yes, she did. She did.
Then it's extremely unfortunate for you that this lady with the silver wheat sheaf in her hat has not come forward to give evidence on your behalf. She has not come forward. Why? Because, I suggest to you, she does not exist.
I can't explain why.
I don't for a moment suppose you can. I've only one other question to ask you. You stated that a month prior to your wife's death, you took out a short-term policy on her life for £3,000.
But I've explained.
I know that she had a premonition that something might happen to her.
Yes. She insisted on my doing it. She had these fancies.
You have told the court a halting and unconvincing story. The only witness who could utter a word on your behalf has failed to put in an appearance. You've heard the evidence of the witness, MacBlain, who states that he saw you and your wife through his binoculars across the valley, standing upon the plateau, that he saw you raise some heavy object in your hands above your head as if to strike.
It was my camera! My camera! I was taking it off my shoulders!
Then he saw a struggle, and a moment later, her fall from the Eagle Rock. It is my painful duty to put this last question to you. Did you or did you not, on the afternoon of the 15th of May, throw your wife to her death?
No, I didn't. It was an accident, I swear, I didn't.
Sir James is not home from court yet, Colonel Mason, but her ladyship will be down in a minute.
Thank you, Pearson. Though, would you ring Scotland Yard and say I shall be here for the next hour? You know the number, extension 42.
Very good. I'll ring through at once, sir. Here's her ladyship now, sir.
Hello, Bill. I'm so glad you've come.
Ah, many happy returns.
Don't remind me it's my birthday.
Why?
I've never spent such a miserable day, sitting in court and watching James hounding down that wretched man.
Then why did you go?
Oh, I don't know. I think it's because I can't bear not to know how the case is going. I feel so terribly about it. Bill, do you think Medcalf has a chance?
None, I should say. Not if James keeps up his present form. Look how he tied him up this morning.
Yes, it was horrible. Tell me, do you think James really thinks he's guilty?
My dear girl, James hasn't any opinions whatsoever on the subject. He's functioning merely as a sort of machine. A machine for grinding out justice.
Justice?
It's his business to present the case and the evidence against Metcalf. What verdict the jury brings is not his concern.
The evening papers, my lady.
Oh, give them to me, Pilsen. Thank you. Yes, yes, here it is on the front page.
Oh.
James' speech for the prosecution. Oh, he's been having a regular gala day.
Oh?
On the rising of the court, the judge informed the jury he hopes it will be possible to finish the case tomorrow. Tomorrow?
It's been 10 days.
Tomorrow. And that'll be the end. Another wretched creature sent to his death by James.
Yvonne, you mustn't take it like
but
that.
But he's innocent. I know he's innocent. I've sat and watched him all through the trial. I know he didn't do it.
My dear girl, he's had a scrupulously fair trial. Every care has been taken to give him a fair chance.
What chance does he have against James?
Oh, come, Yvonne. James has only been doing his duty.
Duty? Can it ever be a man's duty to try and destroy a fellow creature?
We've, most of us, got to do what we're told.
Hello, Bill. Hello, darling.
Hello, James. What have you done to your hand?
Nothing. I pinched my finger.
But it's bleeding.
There's nothing to worry about.
You sure, James? You look very pale. You look as though you could do with a drink.
We'll all have one. Drink, Yvonne?
No, thank you. You better put something on your hand.
All right. Stop worrying, Yvonne. I told Pearson to find the iodine. Here, your drink, Bill.
Oh, thanks.
How did you do it?
Caught it in the door of the car. Stupid, wasn't it? Oh, I'm tired. Thank heaven, tomorrow we'll see the end of this wretched affair.
Wretched?
It's been the most unpleasant business I've ever had to do with. An hysterical public. Stacks of threatening letters. People I've never heard of ringing me up and abusing me on the telephone. What will happen after Metcalf's conviction tomorrow, heaven only knows.
Conviction? After he's convicted? Will he be convicted?
Well, I imagine so. Tomorrow night, Yvonne, we'll fly to the south of France.
Oh, the south of France? Tomorrow? After Metcalf's conviction?
Oh, come. The world's got to go on just the same, you know. Think of Mrs. Metcalf. Well, I'll go and get Pearson to dress my hand.
There, you see, Bill? He's callous. He doesn't care.
It's just as well.
I sometimes feel he could be just as cold and ruthless a criminal as he is in court as the prosecuting counsel.
But you love him, Yvonne.
I did once. I'm not so sure now. Prosecuting one poor wretch after another and always getting convictions. Bill, do something for me.
What?
Help me stop this terrible thing that's going to happen tomorrow. If that man's convicted, I shan't be able to stand it. I'm going to talk to James. You talk to him, too. Try and persuade him that he's wrong about Metcalf.
Do you think he'll listen to us, either of us?
I'm trying to see the truth. And I know if I can't get him to change his mind tonight, I shall leave him.
Leave him? Yvonne, you can't. All right. I'll have a talk with him, but not now.
Anything in the evening paper?
We'll come back later.
More Diana Lewis, I suppose.
6 weeks ago, nobody had ever heard of her.
Cigarette, Bill?
Oh, thanks.
Try one of these.
Hmm?
I found them in a funny little foreign shop near the embankment. They were made in a village in Hungary, and really, they're not bad.
Hmm. Very interesting. Well, how did you chance to come across this shop?
I was walking home along the embankment. I thought it might be a shortcut.
Hungarian cigarette, eh? I must try one.
And I must go and dress. Are you sure you can't stay for dinner, Bill? Tommy Granger's coming.
Oh, I'm sorry. Much as I'd like to, I can't.
Well, remember, I'm counting on you, Bill.
Hmm? What does she mean?
Oh, just that she wants... She wants me to come back after dinner.
She doesn't seem herself tonight.
It's this case. It's hit her really hard. Harder than you realize.
Ah, I was afraid so. What a disgusting business it all is.
You feel that?
Of course I do. Do you think I enjoy it?
Oh, my dear fellow, I never thought for a moment.
No, of course you didn't. Nobody does. I'm trying to do an unpleasant job to the best of my ability, and I get no sympathy from anyone.
Why don't you explain that to Yvonne?
Because I can't afford to weaken.
You know, James, You've always seemed to be two different people.
Well, aren't we all? Jekyll and Hyde. And for the present, I've got to be Hyde-sider. That's what I'm paid for.
Yes, but suppose the man's innocent?
I'm not going to suppose anything of the sort. The chain of evidence is complete. There's not a weak link anywhere.
It might have been a series of coincidences.
Don't you believe it? The only element that might have helped him is this woman wearing the silver wheat sheaf in her head.
Uh-huh.
Produce her, and I have no case. Without her evidence, it all stands complete.
James, we all have our unguarded hour, when all the stars and their courses are against us, when everything goes wrong.
Oh, that may be.
Suppose it was Metcalfe's unguarded hour, and unfortunately, it synchronized with his wife's accident. He is suspected of a murder he never committed. At a time when he is in the blaze of the limelight, all the ill chances come in full circle against him. There is no door through which he can escape.
You certainly are in a strange mood tonight, Bill, weaving these fantastic theories.
There's just one other aspect of the case I'd like to put to you, and then I've done. A murderer's first line of defense is a consistent story. Now, a real criminal prepares for this in advance.
Well, of course.
But an innocent man? Subject him to unexpected questions as to what he did and where he was at such and such a time, and you'll find he has greatest difficulty in answering you. No one bothers to remember these things.
Not intentionally, perhaps, but they're all subconsciously retained, ready to be released at will.
You think so? I wonder, it might happen to you or me. May I try an experiment?
By all means, if it makes you happier.
All right. Let us assume that a murder was committed somewhere this afternoon between 5 and 6, and you come under suspicion.
I do?
Yes, you do. You see, you are an innocent man. You had no time to prepare an alibi. Now, could you establish one?
Of course I could.
Let's try. Where were you between 5 and 6 this afternoon?
Well...
You're hesitating already.
I'm doing nothing of the kind. Well, 5 o'clock, I should say, I was just leaving my chambers.
Mm-hmm. And then?
Then I came home.
Oh, did you?
What do you mean?
I was here when you came home. It was 6:30. From your chambers to this house would take you at the outside, 15 minutes by car. There's more than an hour and a quarter you haven't accounted for.
I didn't come home in the car. I was tired and felt I needed some fresh air, so I sent the chauffeur back and I walked.
What about Atkins?
Atkins?
Sergeant Atkins.
Oh.
The plainclothes man detailed to look after you since we broke up that race course gang.
I told my clerk to dismiss him. You know how I hate him following me about.
So... You dismissed Sergeant Atkins, and you sent your chauffeur home. That's unfortunate.
Why?
Because you lost the only witness who could have proved where you were at a specified time. Now you're under suspicion.
But there hasn't been a murder.
If there had been, it would have been a suspicious circumstance, doing something you don't usually do.
Well, surely anyone
there
might...
There you are, you see. You're already trying to defend yourself.
I walked along the embankment. I looked over the parapet and watched the river traffic. Then I turned and came back home.
I see. Just went for a nice walk, eh? Prove it. Have you a single witness?
Of course not. Witnesses don't follow one about the streets like that.
And yet you have always demanded that the prisoner in the dock should produce witnesses of his most trivial action. Otherwise you say he's lying. So... You walked home.
Yes.
And yet you told us when you came in that you'd hurt your finger getting out of the car.
So I did.
Now, what is the truth? Did you come home on foot or by car? You must have lied somewhere.
Oh, nonsense. I walked home, almost to the house, and then I took a taxi because it was getting late.
That's the kind of lame excuse a prisoner makes when counsel is trying to tie him up in knots.
You do believe me, don't you?
My dear James, as your oldest friend, I am willing to believe anything you say. But as a police officer, I consider you an object of gravest suspicion. Furthermore, you have a cut on your finger. Isn't it conceivable that you had a struggle with your victim?
Well, now you're carrying the joke too far.
I don't say that I should apply for a warrant for your arrest, but I should certainly have you watched by 2 plainclothes men.
Well, then, it's a good thing there wasn't a murder.
Excuse me, Sir James. Colonel Mason is wanted on the telephone. I've switched it through, sir.
Well, James, have I shaken your belief in the value of human evidence? Do you still feel like appearing in court tomorrow and pressing the charge against Metcalfe?
I shall be there.
Yes, Colonel Mason speaking. Is that Wallace? Yes. What, sir? Yes. Yes, I'll come at once. Yes, immediately. James, the famous airwoman Diana Lewis has been murdered in her flat near the embankment.
Diana Lewis?
Yes.
Diana Lewis?
Yes. Between 5 and 6, this afternoon.
Pity you missed dinner, Bill. You could have helped me answer old Lady Harrington's questions.
She expected Tommy, as Home Office pathologist, to provide the answers.
Oh, wish he could answer my latest problem.
What's that?
Unknown woman murdered in Diana Lewis's flat in Mallet Street.
Oh, not Diana Lewis herself, then?
No, that was wrong, apparently. It was a woman to whom she'd let the flat while she was on this fabulous flight.
Oh, what a tragic ending to her world flight. Who was the murdered woman?
No, she hasn't been identified yet. You knew Miss Lewis, didn't you, James?
Well, hardly at all. I met her a few years ago.
Did she live alone in this flat?
Yes, but we have evidence that she was in the habit of receiving visits from a man. A charwoman was in the flat alone this afternoon, and a man phoned to say he was coming to call. She tried to tell him Miss Lewis wasn't there, but he didn't seem to understand. The charwoman returned to the flat, or for some reason, about 6. Found the place all upside down and the poor creature lying on the hearth. Strangled.
What a ghastly business.
Ghastly is right. There was a fire in the grate. The poor woman had apparently fallen against the bars, and her face was almost unrecognizable.
Any clues?
Oh, 1 or 2. The most likely one consists of a bottle of Chartreuse.
Chartreuse, eh? Well, usually it's a cheap champagne.
A man named Savarin runs a little foreign shop under the flat, and according to him, a man called this afternoon and bought 2 bottles of Chartreuse. It's unique stuff, and he can only get it occasionally. He had, in fact, only 2 bottles left. Only 2.
And?
1 was found in the dead woman's flat. The question is, who's got the other?
Yes. What's the matter with your hand, James? I noticed you had it bandaged.
No, it's nothing.
Come on, let me see it. I'll just take off the bandage. About those bottles of Chartreuse, Bill. They're rather intriguing. Pretty cool to strangle a woman and walk out with a bottle of liquor to drink quietly at home.
Mm-hmm.
Am I hurting you, James?
No.
What caused this cut? Knife or a pair of scissors?
I crushed it in the door of the car. What else did you find in the flat, Bill?
Nothing much. No fingerprints.
This doesn't look like a bruise. It's exactly like a cut from a knife or a pair of scissors.
Oh, for goodness sake, Tommy, shut up.
All right. I'll do it up again, but don't think you can humbug me. Caught in the door, my foot. That's a cut from a knife. And if you didn't do it, then somebody else must have done it. And if that someone had been a man, you'd have told me. You won't tell me, so...
So what?
So it must have been a woman.
Oh, hello. Tommy Granger, the Home Office pathologist, putting on his professional manner.
Quite. Tell me, James, is there some little lady?
Oh, don't be a fool.
Oh, I don't mean anything serious.
Remember, they're making me Attorney General. I couldn't take a chance on anything like that.
What you mean is you couldn't take a chance on being found out. You'd take any steps to keep it covered up.
Well, my conscience is perfectly clear.
No, oh, I expect it's for me. May I?
Yes, of course.
Yes, James Dearden's residence. Oh, yes, Wallace, Mason speaking. So you've got a description of the man? Yes. Yes. Excellent. Yes, I'll be along later. Goodbye.
Do we take it that you've got a description of the murderer?
Of the man who was in the habit of visiting Miss Lewis, yes.
What was he like?
Tall, broad-shouldered. Distinguished looking?
Well, that would go for James here.
Or half the members of any service club.
On the floor by the dead woman's side, they found a knife with which they think she tried to defend herself. It's smeared with blood. They believe the murderer will be found to have a cut on his hand.
And James has a cut on his hand. And he's certainly distinguished in his bearing. Bill, you're going to make an arrest in record time. There he is, the very picture of guilt.
Oh, look here, Tommy, shut up.
I'm sorry I've been so long. Lady Harrington's gone at last. Oh, I'm glad you've come back, Bill. But I'm going to tell you all one thing. You're not to keep James up late. Have you looked at his hand, Tommy?
Yes, I have. It's nothing to bother about, nothing. Just bandage it twice a day. Peroxide and iodine alternately.
Excuse me, my lady.
What is it, Pewson?
Your ladyship's birthday liqueur. I thought perhaps your ladyship would wish the colonel to drink your health, as he's done all these years.
Oh, yes, of course I must. It's an old family custom, isn't it, Pewson?
Yes, sir. Allow me, sir. Sir James never forgets to bring a new liqueur home each year for her ladyship's birthday. He brought this one this afternoon.
This afternoon?
Yes, sir.
Oh, thank you. Many happy returns, Yvonne.
Oh, thank you.
Very good stuff, this.
Here, aren't I in on this? I'm very
fond of it. I'm sorry, sir.
Leave it, Pewson. Sir Thomas will help himself.
Yes, my lady.
Now, I'm only going to give you men another 15 minutes.
Yvonne, don't be absurd. You can't turn out our guests like this.
Bill, you understand. It's getting late, and I want to talk to James. It's important.
I'm sorry. What we are discussing is important, too.
Bill...
If you could spare him for another half hour...
I'm not prepared to discuss the Metcalf case with you, Yvonne, not in half an hour or at any time.
But, James...
That's final.
I see. Then if you'll excuse me, I'll go to bed.
Sorry about that, Tommy. Bill?
Yes, yes, very difficult. Well, Bill, you're very silent.
I'm thinking about that Mallet Street business.
Oh, yes, yes. As we were wondering if James's hand wouldn't provide you with a clue.
I'd better have my liqueur.
Help yourself. The bottle's over there.
James, those Hungarian cigarettes you gave me this afternoon, you said you'd bought them in a shop off the embankment. Was it in Mallet Street?
Yes, it was.
In the neighborhood of Miss Lewis's flat?
Yes. I was going to tell you when Yvonne came in.
Good heavens. Miss Potwood.
What's the matter?
Well, here. Read the label.
Oh. Green Chartreuse. Guaranteed 150 years old. Chez Savard. Mallet Street. And you bought this afternoon, James?
I didn't say so.
But Pewson said that...
What's that you have in your hand, Bill? That paper you've taken from your pocketbook?
Oh, that?
Yes, that. That bit of that paper.
Well, it's the label from the bottle found in the flat. The bottle of Chartreuse. I had it taken off.
May I see it? Thank you. Green Chartreuse. Guaranteed 150 years old. Chez Savara, Mallet Street.
Well, don't stand there looking like a stuffed owl. I know what you're thinking. That 2 and 2 make 4. 2 bottles of Chartreuse, 1 in the Mallet Street flat and 1 here. If you really think I'm the murderer, why didn't you say so?
No, the idea's absurd, of course.
You thought it no end of a joke just now, didn't you, pretending I was?
Yes, but we were only joking. All the same, James, it's a little disturbing. But of course you can give us an explanation.
Yes, I can. I did buy that bottle of Savarin, but I got it a month or so ago.
But Hewson said you brought it home today. For Yvonne's birthday.
My dear Bill, I pretended I had. I'm supposed to find a new liqueur for her every birthday. When I saw the Chartreuse, I bought it in case I forgot later. But I said I got it today to prove to Yvonne that I had been thinking of her in spite of my worries. Now, do you see?
Quite. Well, that explains it, doesn't it, Bill?
I suppose so, but...
What do you mean, Bill? Out with it.
There's the description that fits you. And you refused to tell me before dinner what you were doing this afternoon between 5 and 6 o'clock. We know you were in Mallet Street, actually in the building where the murder took place. You have a cut on your hand.
Oh, the confounded cut. Well, I can explain that.
Let's hear them.
Well, as I was leaving my chambers this afternoon, I was followed by a man. It was apparently one of that racecourse gang, you know. He caught me up, started shouting and abusing me, and then he struck at me with a knife.
But you told me...
I know I did. But I felt a little guilty at having told Atkins not to shadow me. and I didn't want you to know.
Where did this attack take place?
Oh, in some back alley, just as I was cutting through to the embankment.
Who saw it?
No one. The street was deserted.
What happened to the man?
He got away.
You didn't hold him?
No.
Do you mean to say that you let the man go? That's not like you.
I didn't want to stir up any more mud while this Metcalf case is on. Do you think I've enjoyed the last 10 days driving that poor fool into corner after corner and watching his feeble attempts to get out?
Jane, but surely...
If you'd have to go through all that day after day, you wouldn't want to harass me with all this string of questions. Where have I been this afternoon? What did I do? What on earth does it matter?
Bill, we ought not to keep old James up. I think we ought to be going.
No. We've got to settle it now.
What more is there to say? I've told you everything. It's not my fault if I can't prove it.
You have not told me everything. You have not told me what you were doing between 5 and 6. If you can give me a satisfactory explanation of where you were, that will be an end of the matter.
I'm sorry, I can't give you any explanation. You must think what you like.
You must have been somewhere. So long as you weren't in the flat, let you out. The whole thing becomes just a joke. You must see how important it is.
Oh, yes, you've tied me up very nicely indeed. And it all started with your idiotic joke about alibis. I tell you, I've explained everything.
Metcalf explained everything?
Metcalf, so he did. Come on out with it, Bill. Do you, in your heart of hearts, believe I did it? If you do, say so.
James, you know quite well if it were anyone else, I'd regard it as my duty to arrest him on suspicion. And then I'd look for further evidence.
Well, now we know where we stand. Non-proven, eh? And let's hope more evidence will turn up. But it won't.
Excuse me, Sir James, but there's an inspector of police to see Colonel Mason.
An inspector?
Inspector Wallace, sir.
Show him in here, Pearson.
Very good, sir.
What can he want? There's probably some fresh development which will clear up the whole thing. What a relief.
I wonder...
Well, there must have been.
We shall see.
Inspector Wallace, sir.
Well, Inspector, you want me?
Yes, sir.
Oh, this is Inspector Wallace, who's in charge of...
Good evening, Inspector.
Evening, gentlemen.
Won't you sit down?
Thank you.
I believe you have some business with Colonel Mason.
Have you anything fresh to report?
Yes, sir, I have. I've had two men rake in the flat in Mallet Street, and they found this, sir.
Oh, a button.
And this knife, sir.
You think it was the one used in the struggle?
Oh, undoubtedly, sir. It lay just where the body'd fallen.
And the button?
Well, that's not so easy. It might belong to anyone. But if we catch our man, and he has a button missing from his coat, well...
It seems to have a thread of material attached. What do you make of it, Inspector?
Black coat button. No maker's name. Coat itself, of which we have a single thread. Black broadcloth, that's as far as we can get tonight, sir.
Mm. Well, leave this knife with me.
Yes, sir.
Oh, if you want me, I shall be here for the next half hour.
Very well, sir. Good night, sir. Good night, gentlemen.
Good night, Inspector.
Good night, Inspector.
So he's found a button. We wanted more evidence, and now we've got it. The button from the murderer's coat. Now then, what are we going to do?
Well, James, may we see your coat?
I've already rung for Pewson to fetch it.
I'm sorry about this, James, but you do realize...
Of course. It'll be in the hall.
You rang, sir?
Oh, Pewson, my jacket, the one I wore this afternoon. Please bring it here.
Your jacket, sir? Yes, sir.
No need to look like that, Tommy. Pour yourself a drink.
No, thank you.
Well, I'll have one. Bill?
No, thanks.
Your jacket, sir.
Ah. Here you are, Bill.
Huh. Oh, the buttons are all there.
Well, thank heaven for that.
But one has been put on, and not by a tailor. Whoever did it has left no neck to the thread.
What?
Pearson, was a button off my jacket when I changed this evening?
Yes, sir. I had it replaced at once.
I see.
I hope I did right, sir.
Yes, quite right. You may go.
Thank you, sir.
Well, I think I'll have that drink now. I can do with it.
James, there's one last chance of settling this matter beyond doubt. Shall we take it?
What is it?
I didn't mention it in front of Pewson, but your gloves are in the pocket of your coat. One is bloodstained from the cut on your hand.
Well?
Tommy... If the blood on the knife and the blood on the gloves are not from the same source, it clears, James.
Yes, and I might be able to establish that by my new agglutination test.
And how long would it take you?
Oh, about half an hour.
Then get along to the laboratory at the yard at once.
But suppose...
Go on. Do as I say. I'll follow you.
All right. I'll do it. But I... Well, good night, James, old man.
Bill, you don't think...
Think? Good heavens, man. Why did you do it?
But I didn't. I tell you, I didn't. I don't know what's happened tonight. It's this Metcalf business.
Oh.
Getting us all mad, worrying about alibis and circumstantial evidence. If you can prove I killed that woman...
James, you know in your heart of hearts what Tommy Granger's report will be.
Tommy Granger. Ha! Tommy Granger.
It's his evidence they hang them on.
Well, then, let them try to hang me. Try, all of you. I don't care. I'll find a way out yet.
Oh, I can't believe it. It seems impossible, but facts are facts.
Rubbish. Might have happened to anybody who'd started playing that devil's game of yours. You were tempting fate. You started a silly game of alibis and presupposed murder, and you fastened it on me. Me! I've explained everything. I've answered all your charges. And they're simply a string of coincidences.
Coincidences?
Yes.
James, you've got one chance. One only. And that is to tell the truth. It's a terrible thing to take a fellow creature's life, but there are sometimes excuses or explanations that might justify me in helping you to get away.
Is this the voice of Scotland Yard?
No. Of a friend. I'm leaving Scotland Yard. I'm beginning to see things from a different angle. You must let me help you.
No. Nobody has ever helped me yet. I got to where I am without asking help of anyone. And if my career is finished, it will finish the same way, but I'll finish my job. Well, you'd better get back to Scotland Yard, Bill.
Very well. And you...
I shall wait and see what Tommy Granger has to say. It can't be his report. It can't be against me. That blood on the knife, the blood on the glove, it's impossible.
Yes. Impossible if...
Unless the whole world has gone crazy.
Tommy Granger.
Tommy's all right. He's never wrong on a chemical analysis. Look at the way he's handled the evidence in the Metcalf case, the marks on the body. He knew that Metcalf...
Yes.
You'd better cut along and come back as soon as you can.
James, do you think...
What?
Suppose the blood test is against you.
No, get out, man. Get out! Pearson? Pearson!
You called, sir?
Oh, Pearson, I want my passport.
Your passport, sir?
Yes, it's kept in my dispatch case.
But, sir, the colonel...
Colonel Mason?
Yes, sir. He asked for it to have it re-stamped or something to do with it being renewed.
I see.
I took it as an instruction from you, sir.
All right, Pearson. And please pack a small suitcase with things for one night. I may have to go away. Leave it in the hall and you can go to bed.
I hope it's nothing serious, sir.
No, no, just a little unexpected. You won't forget the small suitcase.
No, sir. Good night, sir.
Oh, heavens.
Have Bill and Tommy gone?
Yvonne, I thought you'd gone to bed. Why are you dressed like that? Your coat and hat.
I'm leaving this house tonight.
Leaving the house?
I can't stand it any longer.
Can't mean what you're saying. Going? Where are you going?
Anywhere. I must get out. There's something awful happening here, or going to happen. I must get away.
Something awful? You feel that?
Yes. They're going to take a man's life, torture him for weeks, and then kill him as a cat does a mouse. And it all starts from here. And I can do nothing. I must get away. I wanted to talk to you tonight, to have one last chance to make you see that...
See what?
That all these horrible things you've been doing were destroying you. Oh, James, you used to be so kind and gentle and considerate, but you've changed. You're a different person altogether. Hard, callous, cruel.
You must be mad. What could have changed me?
No man can go on punishing, punishing, punishing as you've done year after year without something happening to him.
But it's all over now. I shan't appear in any more murder cases. That finishes when I become Attorney General.
It's too late. For years, your life's been spent in torture and cruelty. Oh, it was all in the cause of justice, I know, but it was torture and cruelty just the same.
Yvonne, what are you driving at?
I think you're like a tiger that's tasted blood. Once started, nothing else will satisfy you. You tell me the Attorney General doesn't usually appear in murder cases, then you'll have no more victims unless...
Unless what?
Unless you seek them out for yourself.
Yvonne, you too? You think...
Oh, I don't know what to think.
Yvonne, I'll go over the whole thing again now, tonight.
Oh, James.
Oh, darling. Now, let's get down to it. Metcalfe's missing witness, that's his sole defense. What do we know about her? Let me think. Where's Kelly's directory of Westmoreland?
It might be on this third shelf. Yes, here it is.
Thanks. Now, what did the fellow say? Came from the direction of Ambleside. Haven't seen her at the hotel. Yvonne, why would a woman wear a silver wheat sheaf in her hat? Yvonne, is it a common ornament?
I've never seen anyone wearing such a thing, but it might be a mascot or a badge or even a crest.
A crest? Give me Clapp's Heraldry. There, that big red book on the second shelf.
Here.
That's it, thanks. Wheat sheaf. Here we are. Wheat sheaf, often found in conjunction with a pierced arrow, Scottish. Let's have another look at the directory. Who in Ambleside has the right to bear arms? Has anyone the right to wear the wheat sheaf? It's 100-1 against still. Lewis. Well, it's a common name. It might be. She might not have heard. Yvonne, I've got it.
You found something.
Diana Lewis, the airwoman.
Diana Lewis? You don't mean...
Yes, I do. I've solved it, and it's all no good. She's gone, vanished. And unless I can produce her in court in 12 hours, Metcalfe will die.
Colonel Mason's here, Sir James. He's coming upstairs now.
Bill!
I must see him, but you go before he comes in. He'll wonder why you've got your hat and coat on. We don't want him to think...
Oh, I'd forgotten. But don't let him keep you, promise. I'll go up through the side door. He won't see me.
Well, James, I said I'd be back.
Tommy's made his test, I suppose. Well, what's the result?
I don't know.
Why not?
He's not finished. He'll phone here in about a quarter of an hour.
Why didn't you wait?
I had to bring your passport back. James, you know what the result of this test will be. Oh, for heaven's sake, clear out. Take the early plane tomorrow. Go, it's the only way.
I've got my job to do tomorrow. I've got to be in court.
To hound that man to his death? When you yourself...
I'm going to do my duty, whatever happens. That'll be Tommy now.
Don't answer it. Just get out, James. Don't answer.
What's the matter with you, Bill? This is Sir James Dearden's house. Scotland Yard. You want Colonel Mason? Yes, he's here.
Is it Tommy Granger?
No. What's that? Some new evidence regarding the Mallet Street case. What has she got to say? Just heard of the murder and wants to give information. This is Sir James Dearden. Diana Lewis. Put her through to me at once. My lord, a new development has just taken place in this case, which, as counsel for the prosecution, it is my duty to bring to the attention of your lordship.
A new development? At this stage?
A lady is in this court to whom I spoke last night. I think she might be able to throw an entirely new light upon the charge against the prisoner. Your lordship will appreciate it is difficult for me in my position to anticipate in any way what may be said by that witness. And I can only make a very strong suggestion to your lordship that this witness should be called.
What has the defending counsel to say about this?
My lord, I ask that this witness should be called.
Very well. Call her.
I call Miss Diana Lewis.
Miss Diana Lewis? Do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Your name is Diana Lewis?
Yes.
Miss Lewis, you are, I believe, the famous airwoman.
Well, if you put it like that, yes.
You returned from your world flight yesterday?
Yes.
I understand that Sir James got in touch with you last night.
Yes, but I don't know what it's about. He simply said I was to come here this morning.
You were in the Lake District this spring, I believe. Was it in the neighborhood of Ambleside?
Oh, yes, I went to say goodbye to my grandmother before starting on my flight.
And did you go to a place called Eagle Rock on May 15th?
On the 15th? Yes. Yes, it would be the 15th.
Is there anyone in court at this moment whom you met there that afternoon upon the plateau of Eagle Rock? Please, look around.
What? Here, in this place? Yes. Yes, I met that man. That man over there. He was there with his wife.
And can you remember any conversation which took place between you or between the prisoner and his wife?
Oh, it's such a long time ago.
I earnestly beg you to search your memory. This man's life depends on your answer.
Oh, really? Such a lot's happened since then.
Did he say? Please.
Yes. Yes, I remember now. His wife would go too near the edge, and he called her back. He said, "For heaven's sake, keep away from the edge. You know you can't stand looking down from a height," or something like that.
One more question, Miss Lewis. One more. That silver wheatsheaf you're wearing, have you had it a long time?
No. In fact, I've only worn it once before, that afternoon. My grandmother gave it to me as a mascot for my flight. It's part of our family crest.
Thank you, Miss Lewis.
My lord, in these circumstances, I submit that there is no longer a case for the prosecution. And I respectfully request that your lordship will consider it right to direct the jury to acquit the prisoner forthwith.
Isn't it marvelous?
Yes. I'm glad Metcalf was acquitted.
Glad? Bill, it's wonderful. It's everything. It's my happiness. It's James. And I haven't even thanked you for helping me.
Please, don't mention it.
But I must. I'm so happy. What's the matter?
I want to see James on a personal matter.
He's not home yet. And don't look so dismal.
I'm sorry, but I'm waiting for important news.
Well, then laugh and be gay. I know it'll be good news. Nothing can go wrong today. Oh, you must stay to lunch. And I must go and see to things. But James won't be long. Help yourself to a drink while you're waiting.
Thanks. I will.
Well, Bill, what have you to say now?
You've got courage, all right, James. Going into court today.
Well?
There's only one thing left. You've still got to prove your alibi.
You hold an unbeatable hand, Bill, but I've decided to make you a present of the ace.
Oh?
I was at Diana Lewis's flat.
You did go to the flat?
You know I was in Mallet Street at Savarin's shop. I had an impulse to go and congratulate an old friend on her flight. I knocked, but got no answer. So I came away. But what's the use of saying so?
You swear you didn't go in?
I do.
And the Chartreuse?
I told you last night. I bought it a month ago.
Sergeant Atkins would like to see you, sir.
See me? Oh, then show him in.
Yes, he's right here, sir.
What does he want?
Goodness knows.
Good morning, Sir James. Oh, morning, Colonel Mason. I've been looking for you.
Well, Atkins?
We've arrested the man, sir. The man who attacked Sir James last night.
What's that?
Well, sir, acting on routine instructions, I followed Sir James home yesterday and...
You followed me?
Yes, sir. But knowing it was contrary to your wishes, I kept at a safe distance.
Atkins, go on.
Well, Sir James walked along the embankment, sir, leaned over the parapet a bit, and then went into a shop in Mallet Street.
Yes?
Then he went upstairs to where Miss Lewis has her flat.
Now, Atkins, did he go into the flat?
Oh, no, sir. No, he knocked on the door, but the door wasn't opened. I could see clearly. A few minutes afterwards, he came away.
Yes. And afterwards?
Well, Sir James continued his walk when suddenly a man went up to him. The next thing I saw was that he struck at Sir James and then ran off.
Why wasn't I told all this last night?
Because I only arrested him an hour ago, sir.
I see. Well, thank you, Atkins. I'll take charge of Sir James now. You can consider yourself relieved.
Thank you, sir. Oh, excuse me, Sir James. Your button. I picked it up after the attack. Good morning, sir. Good morning, Sir James.
Oh, good heavens, James. Oh, my dear fellow. Oh, what a relief.
Let this be a lesson to you not to start inventing parlor games in your old age.
Oh, James, I'm cured.
Sir Thomas Granger.
Ah. Well, Tommy, how goes it?
I'm upset.
Upset? Why?
My new blood test. It doesn't work. I tested the blood on the knife with the blood on the glove and got a positive result. And so far, so good.
Thank you.
And then I worked it out again with a drop of my own blood. And I got a positive result again. I've been up half the night, but there's no getting out of it.
Very disappointing for me.
Disappointing? It's shattering. I might have been responsible for a serious mistake. It might have been very awkward for someone.
It's what I've always said. That you must never believe in circumstantial evidence. And now, if you two will stay for lunch, we might as well finish that confounded chartreuse.
Oh, that's a happy thought.
What's a happy thought?
I was just saying that we'd finish that bottle of chartreuse I bought for you a month ago.
A month?
Oh, no. I mean yesterday, your birthday.
Oh, darling.
Come on, Tommy. You need a wash.
Oh, no, I don't.
I see. Yes, yes, I do.
Yes.
Well,
happy to see the things have turned out.
Happy, my darling?
Yes.
And you forgive me?
Of course.
No more prosecuting. No more missing witnesses.
I don't mind how many witnesses we have.
Oh, darling.
Unguarded Hour by Bernard Merivale was adapted and produced for radio by Anne Free.
And be sure to tune in next Wednesday night at 8 and every Wednesday night for the week's finest radio entertainment brought to you for your listening pleasure by your hosts, the Brewers of Castle Lager. So until next week then, a very good night to you all.